I'm Elena Lansberg-Lewis, your host of Grandmothers on the Move, the podcast that kicks old stereotypes to the curb. Come meet these creative, outrageous, authentic, adventurous, irreverent, and powerful disruptors and influencers. Grandmothers, from the living room to the courtroom, making powerful contributions in every walk of life. We know them most intimately as loving caregivers, the older women in our lives with a thousand stories about their grandchildren and pictures in their purses. In this podcast, you'll come to know even more about our grandmothers. They are galvanized, determined, and are guaranteed to get you thinking. What drives them? What are they up to? What is the potential of grandmother power, and how is it changing the world? Grandmothers are on the move. You don't want to be left behind. Hi, it's Ilana. Welcome back to Grandmothers on the Move. Well, today I'm talking to you about a program that I heard about recently called Well Connected, part of an organization called COVIA. This award-winning program offers activities, education, support groups, and friendly conversation over the phone or online. And it's for people over 60. It's in the U.S. You can connect from anywhere. It's a community made up of facilitators, presenters, staff, other volunteers who care about each other and who value being connected. All groups are accessible by the phone from wherever you are at no cost. And whether you like art or zoology, music or meditation, there's a program, or as they call it, an activity where people connect to converse and to spend time together. I've posted the information on how to get connected with Well Connected on my website for the podcast. So today I'm going to speak with Pat Schroeder, who's a program specialist at Well Connected. She's a facilitator extraordinaire. Welcome to Grandmothers on the Move, Pat. It's wonderful to have you with us today.
I'm so happy to be with you, Ilana. Thank you for inviting me.
But I was fascinated by the whole idea that there were people who were having phone conversations to keep each other company, keep each other motivated, have stimulating or reflective moments in their day. And I thought it would be truly wonderful to speak to someone who is a grandmother herself and is a facilitator of these conversations. And that led me to you, Pat.
And since you're the conversation expert, I hope I live up to your standards.
Oh, no. Maybe sort of, kind of. I've had a lot of practice over the years, and I'll admit readily that talking on the phone is not my favorite thing to do. But this program that I work with, Well Connected, is just so extraordinarily special. People can connect by the phone. It's like, woohoo! It's a wonderful program that is exactly as you described. It provides an opportunity for people all over the United States to connect with each other, to motivate each other, inspire each other, to commiserate with each other, to learn new things, and to have fun. A program of just a great variety of conversations, and each week we have about 75 different group activities that all can be accessed by the phone. Doesn't matter where you live. We get calls from people all over the country every day, and it's absolutely free. All you need is a phone, any kind of phone. I like to say, sounds a little corny, but I like to say it's the cat's meow, because it just creates such positive feelings in the moment for people who don't have as much company as they used to have, don't have friends around them physically, can't get out as much. At the same time, we have a lot of people, and majority women, so the idea of grandmothers on the move, many, many are grandmothers. They are just able to fill their time with something that I think enhances their well-being and their feeling of like, oh, I'm not all alone. And I just know that that happens because people say this to us all of the time. And I'm the lucky one who gets to be part of the group of people who put the program together and also, as you said, facilitate some of the programs, respond to inquiries about the program. It's a wonderful opportunity for me to stay engaged in life. And that's always what I'm looking for at this point in my life.
It's such a lovely idea because connection is everything, and we know that. And one of the things that I certainly hear speaking to older women and grandmothers is that very often, if they have children, their children are adults and they're busy with kids and life and work. And it can be a time in life which has some loneliness in it.
Yeah, most definitely. And one of the shifts in our thinking, Alana, that has been happening in the last couple of years, and let me pause and say there's no question that a goal of this program is to decrease isolation and loneliness and have people feel as if they have companions in life. What we're trying to do is turn that thinking around about who I am in the moment, a person who's lonely or isolated, not negating it, but looking at it from the standpoint, since I know that I can still be engaged in life, i.e. I feel inside that I still want to be engaged in life, I can't get out to do that always, or I can't get to every kind of program or a senior center in the community where some of the group activities we have on the phone are available. And so what can I do to stimulate myself? Being engaged in life, learning new things, I know makes a difference in how I'm going to feel on a daily basis. And it may even lengthen my life just a titch. So it's kind of that shift from doing something for someone to being with someone in a mutually beneficial kind of activity. And if I'm making myself clear, it's not about denying that people are lonely and isolated, but it's introducing something to them that provides the joy of connection. Most of us know that. And so let's just get into that connection mode. That's kind of a shift, I think, in thinking about older adulthood anyway. You know, it's not just a time of decline and, you know, getting lonely and depressed. It's a time when, to the best of my ability, mental and physical, I can still be up and at 'em.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I like the construction of it because it doesn't infantilize. And I love what you're saying about mutuality. And I'm so interested to hear what happens during those phone calls.
Right. Yeah, it's one thing for us to say and publish in our materials, and for me to tell you, I hear from people all the time how much they love Well-Connected and it has saved their life. And that's not being dramatic. Very often people say that, but it's that visceral experience of being part of that conversation and that process that really, I think, people get excited about. Now, let me also say that people can be on a call or a program or an activity, and there's absolutely no obligation that they talk a lot or a little or whatever. It's the process or the flow includes how comfortable someone is, especially in the beginning. And our facilitators, they're just wonderful at making everyone who is new feel welcome in just looking at how it is people can support each other. We all want to do that.
Right. So tell me a little bit about your experience of this as a facilitator and as a participant in these mutual conversations.
Mm-hmm. Well, on occasion, it can be challenging in that, as we all know, there might be someone who gets so excited that he or she talks, and it's a little challenging to slow that person down. But for the most part, having a little bit of structure, inviting people to give their name and then diving into the topic, one of the groups I facilitate, which absolutely makes my day and my week, and I listen in on occasion in addition to facilitating, is our morning gratitude. We have every day of the week, people call in and they pause. They say what they're grateful for right now, and in the context of affirming that they're still alive and the aches and the pains and whatever else is going on can temporarily be put aside as I remember what it is I'm really grateful for. Now, describing that, I can say that it includes laughing with each other, crying with each other, and really affirming someone's reality right now. So every once in a while, someone will say, well, I just don't feel good today. Doggone it. you know, and and we all say, but it's okay to be honest and say how I'm feeling if it's a particularly down day, because it's almost 100% certain that having participated in that half hour program, I'm going to end the call with feeling more positive and more energetic. And that happens to me every single time I do it. Another group that I facilitate is called Advocacy Now, and this is a little more challenging. The idea behind the group is to have conversations about political issues. In particular, we focus on issues or realities of older and disabled adults, educate ourselves about legislation that is potentially going to affect an older or disabled adult. And this could be anything from changes in Medicare to how it is we can advocate for more affordable housing, both at the national and state and local level. And that's a little more challenging in that, obviously, in today's chaotic political world, each of us has a feeling here and there about what's going on. And what I get to do is help facilitating that person, allowing that person to vent if, you know, she's really upset about what's happening with the government or not happening, and then honor the fact that her opinion may be very different from someone else's. We can do that, and we have been able to do that. It's taken me time as a facilitator to kind of feel comfortable with that, you know, here it comes, kind of thing.
I can imagine.
Yeah, but it works. And then we end our time together, an hour each week, with a to-do list. If someone wants to make a phone call, write a letter, send a postcard, send an email to whatever level of government legislator is dealing with something we're interested in. And it's been very dynamic, and people seem eager to have this opportunity. And it's been good for me. I've really learned a lot and honed my facilitating skills, too.
Wow, I can only imagine. That's quite something, because in the current climate in the U.S., certainly, there are a lot of experienced people who are trying to figure out how to have civil conversations between unlike-minded adults and not succeeding particularly well. So that's quite extraordinary that you're able to have a full conversation where people feel heard and participate in activism.
Most of the time. Well, I'd say every single week. And that is evidence of what happens over a period of time. People get to know each other, and they do, for the most part, want to hear what someone else has to say. They're willing to listen, and there's a community there, not an exclusive community, because people can join anytime. And it's possible that a few people join and we try and follow up with folks who don't come back and just decide, oh, that's really not the group for me. Why having such a variety of offerings is ideal.
It's such a brilliant idea. I mean, that is a really nice segue into something that I wanted to ask you about, which is this idea of community. Because as you say, people come in and out of the conversation. And so how you create a sense of community, that must lie partly, obviously, in the participants who join in with the spirit of community and making connection, but very much with the facilitator to approach each call as a community building exercise, I would think.
Well said. Perfect, Alana. Absolutely. Yeah. Because you don't know exactly what's going to happen each time. And so having the self-confidence and or the willingness to experience a little discomfort if something gets hot and heavy is part of a growth experience for me. And likewise for any of the facilitators. The majority, I would say 90% of the facilitators who facilitate ongoing groups, i.e. a group happens every week and then they take a short break, are people who were participants, and then, of course, our participants in other groups. So they get hooked. I mean, I had a conversation this morning with one of our participants who's been on Well Connected for probably 3 or 4 months. And she said, oh, I want to facilitate. How do I do that? So we're always inviting people. And there's screening. People kind of need to be in Well Connected for a few months before we can say, go for it. But if a person has an idea and or says, you know, I'd like to try facilitating gratitude, we're going to do everything we can to encourage that person and support that person, because that's part of a little growth in that person. And it's fun to be a facilitator. So that's where our facilitators come from. And they're just so dedicated. A lot of people haven't volunteered much in their lives, but as an older adult, have a little more time to do that. And this is perfect opportunity or way to do it.
You speak with such generosity of spirit. Clearly, you have a lot of patience and are willing to play the role of benevolent guide in these conversations. How did you come to this?
Let me say that I'm glad you asked, because I always like to share about the fact that I came to the wonderful opportunity of working with older adults many, 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 many years ago, again, as a volunteer. And this was at a point in my life when I was able to be home for a few years with my son. And so I was wanting to do volunteer work. There was a little senior center program starting at my church, and I signed on the dotted line, a non-sectarian model located at our church. And I absolutely knew, in a way that has always been hard to put into words, but I just knew that I wanted to spend my time with older people. There was just some kind of affinity and some kind of energy, to be metaphysical, that just got me so excited. And I never got bored hearing about the lives of older people. And I had been an elementary school teacher before I had my one son. Believe it or not, when I needed to go back to work, there weren't any jobs. Teaching was very competitive here in Oakland, where I live, and a paid position came along to work with older adults. And ever since then, my whole life focus through my career has been with older adults. And it's been a very exciting time to do that, because it's not only kind of on the cusp of the growth of how it is that, you know, theoretically we support older adults through government and other programs, but then I got to grow older. I am now definitely an older adult, age 77, that I just know I need and want to be connected to older people. Now my peers, some older, some younger, right. But I continue to learn. And it's almost selfish in that being with older adults keeps me going. It's that simple. It sounds kind of, oh, really? Yes. Really?
Not so much to me. I mean, actually, I have a real affinity for what you're saying, because through the work that I've been doing, working with grandmothers, and as they call themselves in the Grandmothers Campaign here in Canada, grandothers who join in to support them. That. Yeah, self-named, they came up with it. And it's one of the reasons that I started this podcast, was that I realized that there was such a deficit in our society around hearing from and listening to, but older women in particular. And I couldn't get enough of it personally. Once I started, I realized there's such a wealth and diversity of experience and insight.
Oh my gosh.
It's breathtaking.
Yeah. And I also think I'm experiencing in myself as at this age, I'm experiencing this phase of my life as being, for me, it's become the most dynamic, developmentally challenging phase of my life. I'm not able to articulate why exactly, but I know it intuitively that who I am and who I'm becoming is so powerful. I've not experienced life in quite the same way. And for me, always, it's difficult to put into words these powerful feelings. I think it is for most of us, but I'm just in awe sometimes of what it feels like to be an older adult, an elder, a grandmother in this day and age. But I also am grateful that I am at this point in history. I also think it's one of the most dynamic periods in history for shifting our thinking about who I am and who an elder is. So it's very exciting, and I'm glad I'm here for the journey, for the ride.
You've articulated something that I've often asked grandmothers and older women that I'm interviewing, which is to try to talk about grandmotherhood and how that has shifted your way of seeing the world and seeing yourself, and also this kind of liberation that seems to come, if I can put it in those terms.
Great question. First and foremost, I'll say, and I hear this from many grandmothers, I don't get enough time with my granddaughter. There's no question about that. But I did when they were younger, especially the two older ones. I have such joy-filled memories of giggling with them and taking a bath with them and getting into trouble with them. I mean, we just played and played and played. And so there have been moments as they've gotten older when I thought, oh, I wonder if that connection is still there. But it is, very gratefully. And I have enough ego strength that I can say their lack of as much contact as I would like doesn't have anything to do with me, because on many occasions I will get a call out of the blue or a text out of the blue. And recently my oldest granddaughter, she's working now on a project. She's just about ready to finish college, and she called me for some advice and information and wanted to know my experience in the area that she was researching. So I have considered being a grandmother one of the most joy-filled experiences of my life. And I believe, although I have not had as many opportunities to talk with them about this as I would like, I believe that who I am in the world has influenced their thinking. And my middle granddaughter and I actually have had quite a few conversations about what it means to be a woman in this society. And I also have shared how it's been to be a single woman and an aging woman. And she has listened carefully and written in papers, I know, about what I have said to her. So I'm like many grandmothers. I worry about their future as it is today, but I believe I've been able to be somewhat of a role model and will continue to be in terms of letting go of what you just said about what isn't important anymore in my life. That's hopefully a natural process, and sharing with them why a certain behavior or something that I think I should do, but the shoulds are not in my life as much. Right. And so I think they have benefited from that and look to me as kind of a role model.
That resonates deeply for me. I see it in my mother's relationship with my kids too. You have a window into so many older women's lives. What do you hear from other women when you're on these calls? Are there things that have surprised you? There's been so many voices and so many experiences you've been privy to.
Yeah. And the voices continue to be those of something I've said many times already, being engaged in life, that whatever is going on, and it's mostly women, of course, the women's lives that I am engaged with in our groups, is such that there's an inner strength that they'll get through it. At the same time, I have to admit that I hear people say in some of these conversations, negating a little bit about that positive gratitude, but just really being very clear about the fact that even if they do have family, they don't have as much contact with the family as they would like to. The other part of it, though, is I have heard from women over and over and over that under no circumstances do they want to interfere with the lives of their children and grandchildren. That independence that is culturally alive and well in our country, I can do it myself, comes up often in conversations with people saying, I don't ask for help enough from anyone, let alone family. They don't want to be a burden to their family. So I think that we've kind of moved away from cultural richness as we used to have, good, bad, or otherwise. So women still continue to be focused on family if they have family and friends to an extent, but not like it used to be. And there's some regret in that. I'm of a mind, Alana, that the word independence, I think, actually could be tossed out of our vocabulary, and at least here in the United States.
Right.
It might be healthier for it, because we have to be interdependent, to use the cliche. Yeah, I mean, we have to be more connected in a way that it's healthy to look out for each other, period.
Right. I haven't spoken to too many women, older women, about this concern about being a burden on adult children. But I imagine if you're talking to women who are at home and on a phone call and having conversations and who are actually reaching out to be engaged, as you say, that construction of being a burden or not being a burden is, as you say, deeply problematic.
It really is. And it's a very insidious reality, I will say, in the United States. We're celebrating the birthday of a woman who just turned 100 just a couple weeks ago in my church on Sunday. And while she has a daughter who lives close to her, invariably she'd say, I don't want to be a burden on my daughter. Well, she's 100. She is 100. Now her daughter watches out for her and her granddaughter does too. But I hear that so often. I don't want to be a burden on my family. What does that mean?
Right. That's what I was just going to say. That suggests that older women in our midst do not have this vital, vigorous, important role to play. Because you can't be a burden if you're one of the holders of knowledge, communicators of insights, actively engaged in whatever is going on. And so the construction of being a burden is such a diminishment.
That's so well put, Alana. And I think that that's one of the challenges, again, in current, you know, society. How are we going to recreate that concept so that we can look to each other for support, you know, and not feel like we're being a burden. But it's also then both for the family or the younger people in an elder's life, understanding and accepting. And I am just absolutely vehement about the idea that I need to accept my age. If we were moving into another popular topic, denying aging. I am so passionate about saying I am 77 and thank God, I have pretty darn good health. I have a few challenges. And by gum, my body and my being, my memory, they're not the same as they used to be. And why the heck do they have to be? That is natural. I mean, it sounds so logical. It's so like, oh, come on, lady, get over it. But it's like, no, because I even have very good friends who I've known for years who just are so uncomfortable being older. Now, having said that, there are days when I think, holy Toledo, you know, I'm 77. Let's see, how much more time do I have? Right. But in the middle of it is just that I need to be the best I am today. So how do I do that? And it isn't that way every day. But I abhor our inclination to just say, go away, old. You know, okay.
The subtext is a kind of horror of aging. Our culture in North America, I mean Canada, but it's the same, has such an allergy to aging.
Exactly. And it gets us into a whole nother conversation of like, okay, where is it in who I am that I understand why I'm here, what my connection to, you know, spirituality is, and how I understand the fact that growing older is a pretty natural process. Not always pleasant. I'd be the first to say that.
Like my mother says, getting older is not for wimps.
No, it absolutely is not. But the fact of the matter is, it's happening. And so how am I going to grow older myself? And what is it that I could do without preaching or hitting people on the head with my thoughts about growing older? And they've been honed by many older adults. So I respect the fact that I've learned from the best.
And now you share those insights with so many others. I mean, I can imagine that in these conversations, must be a place too where people feel, and older women in particular, feel that they can give voice to some of these feelings without feeling self-conscious.
Exactly. And so it's a peer support group in the sense, though, you know, we don't call it as such. We've had groups that focus on growing older and what that means. We've had groups on spirituality and aging. We've had groups on being a woman and growing older. And so that's all part of what we try and develop as our offerings. But it happens in just about every group. Something will be said or put out there that talks about, I am an older adult and what that means to me. You know, just a comment, but it's there. It has to be there.
Of course, it makes sense. And if the conversations are meaningful, if they're authentic, then those things are bound to come up.
And there are many moments when when we're on a group, and there doesn't happen to be a man in the group too. Sometimes there might be a man that we speak candidly about, if not the Depends, the pads we wear, and right, et cetera, and, you know, our sagging boobs, and, you know, so, right, but with some humor, but also, you know, some poignancy. It is really a different, but that begins to be part of the acceptance of who I am at this age too. You know, I can only do so much, and I'm really pretty okay, you know.
Right. I really love that. And I love that because you feel that way, that surely must open spaces for other women to be able to experience what that sounds like when you express it.
Yeah, and that is really the part of it. It's being the model, you know, role model or mentor in this process. And that's what I hope I'm doing to an extent. And I know so many women who are too. I just love to be with women of my age. And they're not all grandmothers either. For some, that's been a poignant reality. And so that's been talked about in groups, not having grandchildren. My sister is a little bit younger than I am, and she does not have a grandchild, nor will she. She has two adult children who don't have kids. But that's what I do. That's what I and others do. We talk about those disappointments or those losses and those feelings that are still there about something that I didn't get or have or achieve in life, and yet it moves me into a greater acceptance of who I am now and what I did have. One of the women says, I'm grateful for all that I have and all that I don't have, you know.
Right.
So,
right. I love all of this. I think it's just so powerful. And I want to come back to your granddaughters for a moment and talk about them. We had talked earlier, there's Daniela, who's 22, and Jana, who's 20, and Marissa, who's 13. And I love how you talked about what you recognize and understand that they're getting from you. Because you're someone who is, and it sounds like you've been doing this for a long time, who's been perfecting the art of conversation, the art of listening, the art of listening for the subtext, guiding conversations through troubled waters and sometimes mm-hmm. incendiary moments, but also the gentleness that it takes to encourage people to come forward in your relationships with the people that you're close to. Mm-hmm. Do you find that that's changed sort of the way that you approach it or experience it, or is this just something that you've been building and coming to all your life?
Oh, that's a very good question. And in a way, I think it's something that I've been moving into. But again, at this age, and as a grandmother with my granddaughters, what I hope I convey is, because I feel this more strongly than I ever have in my life, it's that I can only accept that person, my granddaughters, where they are right now. Doesn't mean that I can't give advice or can't make suggestions. But when I listen to someone and something gets triggered in me, like, oh, you know, really, maybe they need to try this. I've just finally come to the place where even if I get triggered with a feeling of like, oh, I don't agree at all. I'm not a patsy. People don't walk over me. But as we talk, we may go through a process of thinking differently together. But it's that listening with empathy that says, well, that's where that person is right now. And that's fine.
Well, and that's probably what makes you such a wonderful facilitator, frankly.
Well, doesn't mean I don't have feelings inside.
No.
Or, you know, something gets triggered and I think, oh, that doesn't make sense. And I say that in my head.
Right.
But, you know, that part of listening has just been much more available as I've gotten older. It feels different now. It feels like that is such a truth, period.
And that's something amazing to arrive at any time in life. If everyone had access to the conversations that you have the privilege to be a part of and that others have a privilege to be a part of being guided by you, what do you think they would come away with?
They would come away with a greater self-acceptance a really profound feeling of belonging that may or may not happen right away. That would happen over a period of time, and awareness that as an older adult, they still count and what they have to say makes a difference. And I think really, ideally, the feeling or the idea that they can still contribute, they can still be part of an engaging community and offer something by facilitating and or making suggestions for ideas for new groups. But it's that strong feeling of being accepted, belonging, and ideally feeling a little healthier, both physically and mentally.
That's really valuable. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. I don't want to leave, though, without letting people who are listening know how they can connect to Well Connected.
Yeah, it's a toll-free number nationwide, 1-877-797-7299. Our main number is in San Francisco, and we can sign you up. There's a good four-letter word, free. F-R-E-E.
Well, I really hope that people listening in other countries will be inspired to start something similar. It really sounds wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you so much for your really special attention to who we are. And, oh, it's a good time to be an older adult. Join us. We'll liven your life up.
I love that so much.
Thanks for listening. I'm Ilana Landsberg-Lewis, your host of Grandmothers on the Move. If you want to find out more about me or the podcast, go to grandmothersonthemove.com and come back next week for another episode.